It is alive. Yes, I am back. Thank you guys for putting up with my absence, but it is episode 42, I believe, of the Cherokee Rewind. I am Mick. Thanks for, like I said, hanging out and tuning in again, not giving up here on me. But today's guest is somebody who, my goodness, I knew him when he played here with the Cherokee. And I also ran into him years later when we were on the road in Grand Rapids at a pro shop in the arena that that Grand Rapids played in at the time, when they used to be in the league we were in. I've subsequently had, I had not heard from this young man, but the funny part is, well, I wouldn't say the funny part, but the probably one of the neatest things about, I can say about a guy, and just pay homage to him, because when he found out I was sick and what was going on with me with the cancer and stuff, he reached out to me. And just totally out of the blue, I got this voicemail. And then I was like really moved by it. And then all of a sudden, I cleared out some stuff on my phone and I inadvertently cleared out his number. But I went back and went through my history through my carrier. And I was able to find the number. There was only one number from Wisconsin, and that's this guy's. And of course, if I remember correctly, two things. One, he's fr are you from Oconomowoc?
That's correct, Mike. It's Oconomowoc. Yep.
Yep. Wow, I can't believe I figured that one out. And then the other is I always try to figure out somebody's jersey number that they wore when they played in Toledo. And if I remember, I'm trying to remember. Like I said, a lot of names and a lot of years trying to crush into this. But I think if I remember correctly, you wore, I'm going to take the stab at it and say 21.
That is correct.
Wow, I can't believe I got it.
You
21.
nailed it.
Well, anyway, the gentleman this I'm talking about is a fine young man by the name of Chris Kraft. And Chris played, you played in the early part of last decade, correct? I mean, like 2001 and 2.
So I played 01, 02, and then 02, 03. So yeah, 2 seasons.
Wow. And my goodness. And you were, I remember because a couple other things too. Number one, your family. They were absolutely wonderful people. And number two, they were crazy, just like you. And you guys are a fun bunch, I tell you. You guys really, I always look forward to when your folks were able to make the trip in. First of all, welcome Cherokee Rewind, and thanks for doing this.
Absolutely, thank you.
And now, I guess the questions I can start with now. First things first, let's start from, I always try to start with when you started playing the game, when you took the game up. Talk to me about what got you interested in this crazy sport that we all know and love.
Yeah, so I mean, starting kind of, back when I was young, 79, something like that. Just kind of playing pond hockey a little bit here and there. My dad taught me how to skate. Just kind of the more and more getting into it. In Southeast Wisconsin, what 20 year, 20, 25 years ago, hockey wasn't necessarily the most prevalent sport in the world. So just kind of had limited exposure to it, not really having it be a, kind of a known playing option necessarily. So, just kind of, watching, I think when I started watching it was, the early 90s when, Mario and the early Penguins were, tearing up the league. And that's actually why I'm a Pens fan, big Mario fan. So that kind of got me interested in the sport. And so, yeah, my parents kind of, got me into it a little bit. I expressed that I wanted to play. They ended up, getting me a roller hockey net at first just to see if it was something I actually enjoyed or if it was just kind of a flavor of the day, flavor of the day kind of thing. And I ended up actually breaking the net because of how much I used to use it and shoot pucks at it and all that kind of fun stuff. So
Wow.
I think after that they kind of realized that, it was something I enjoyed. And so yeah, from there I started, I want to say second year squirt, so roughly 10 years old, was the first time I played organized hockey, and just kept plugging along from there.
So, was there a lot of Was there a lot of organized hockey in Oconomowoc or no?
So the organization that I actually played for was, it's basically more or less when I was there, it was pretty much the entire county that I live in or that we lived in then was pretty much part of that organization. My two sons actually play for the exact same organization now.
Wow.
There's a couple more teams than were around when I was little, but it's more or less fairly similar. Where, like I said, it's a handful of school districts that are all put together, as opposed to just in one like city per se.
So, Chris, let me ask you. Tell me how you progressed as far as moving from one organization to the next, getting more serious about your hockey as you move through the ranks when you went from squirt, you know, I mean, obviously Pee-wee, Bantam, I mean, where along the line did you go?
Yeah, so like I said, I played my first year of organized hockey was I played squirt B as a second year squirt, and then I played 2 years of Pee-wee with the same organization. I played my first year Bantam, again with Waukesha, and then after that I played my freshman year. Oconomowoc actually had a program, the high school had a program at the time. Mm-hmm. When I was there, they were fortunate enough to actually have, they were able to completely have a varsity team and a JV team. Unfortunately, that's not the case anymore. They're part of a co-op team where there's like three or four high schools that are all put together. But so I played my freshman year, I played on the JV team, and then I actually ended up going out to Madison my sophomore year to go play for the Madison Capitals AAA team, for the midget minor team. Then my junior year, I played Wisconsin AAA, which is based out of Milwaukee. I think it's called the Milwaukee Junior Admirals now. Same team, just different name. And then from there, I played my senior year in Toledo, and then played Toledo again the year after, and then I played 2 years in the Northern Ontario Junior Hockey League for the Northern Michigan Black Bears.
That was kind of, they weren't officially our feeder team, the team that we fed, but we fed them a lot of guys. So
yeah, that's for sure.
So we fed Northern Ontario quite a few guys. But
yeah, I think pretty much just the CSHL in general was a feeder team for that team, because yeah. There was a lot of old CSHL guys that were on the team when I played there.
Well, we'll get into that here in just a little bit. But I was going to ask you, do you remember when you first started and you did Squirts B, who was your coach?
His name was Mr. Costello. I believe his first name was Tim. And yeah, he had a kid that was on our team. And then, if I remember correctly, I believe he had a younger son who was, I think he played in the USHL. Like, he was actually a pretty good player. But I didn't have much exposure to him. But yeah, I do remember Mr. Costello was our coach.
What I'm trying to think, does the name Zeke Costello comes out at me for some reason, that played in our league. He didn't play for Toledo. He just played in the league. I just can't remember where he played. But, oh, well, it must not have been him. Anyway, so now, what was it that made you want to jump from high school to travel?
I mean, I think competition. As much as Wisconsin would like to think that high school hockey is as big as it is in Minnesota, it really isn't. I mean, high school hockey in Minnesota is a completely different beast. I think you may have a couple teams maybe in northern Wisconsin that could kind of rival that, you know, excitement level and that talent level. But down in this part of Wisconsin, that's not really the case. So, you know, we're just looking for a little bit better competition, looking for, you know, a little bit more experience with coaching and stuff like that. And so, excuse me, I was actually very fortunate. And I had the late Bob Suter from the 1980, you know, Miracle team ended up being our head coach.
Wow.
And so his son Ryan, who still plays for Minnesota in the NHL today, he was on our team also. So there was some pretty high end skill on our team. And having the good fortune of having Bob as our coach was, I mean, that's kind of a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah, I can't pass that one up, that's for sure.
So, right.
So let me ask you something here. What was it like when you see guys like that playing, and where did you think your role was, and how did you fit in as far as what you thought you should be doing, the type of role you should be playing on a team like that?
Yeah, so that was a bit of an adjustment, I would say, from being one of the top kind of go-to guys from just like travel team, just like normal double A teams, to then going to a team where I was the only kid who had never played Triple A Madison before. Everyone else pretty much was returning. So it was a little bit different, just trying to break into kind of like the social aspect of it,
Oh, yeah.
because you know what I mean? Just because you're not necessarily, you're a new guy essentially. So that took a little bit of a transition. And then, like from going from a kind of a go-to guy to more of a, like a third or fourth liner where, I mean, you,
More of a role
like
player.
your expectations, you're not supposed to be toe dragging and dangling people at the blue line. You get the puck deep and you work for it. So that definitely took a little bit of a, you kind of take a big gulp of your pride and realize that, when you have again, when you have a coach like that who's telling you that this is how you're supposed to play, you just do it and that's it. So it definitely took a bit of a transition, but my game absolutely exploded from where I started the year at to where I finished the year at.
Well, that's a good thing then. Let me ask you. So, you play there. Was the team any good?
Actual team itself, we were actually good. We our biggest Achilles heel was in our net. So we had two goaltenders who, when they were playing at the top of their game, were fantastic goalies. But when if they had an off day, like they weren't letting three pucks in, we were talking four, five, six. So
Ooh.
yeah, we I mean, as far as as far as a skill team, I mean, like I said, our defenseman, we had, well, Ryan Suter, I mean, he got drafted, what, like seventh overall or something like that. So he was pretty good. We had another kid who played, his name was Evan Stofflet. He played at Vermont for 4 years. And then there was another guy, I believe his name was Jeff Slindy. He played at Wisconsin. I don't think he played a ton of games, but I know he was at least, like kind of like an eighth or ninth defenseman, so he would kind of fit in. But I mean, still, they have three D1 defensemen on one midget minor team. Like we had some kids who could play, so it our skaters were pretty good. It's our opportunity would have been in net for sure.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, did you guys finish near the top of the ranks or of the division or?
Actually, that year we so like that midget minor year we did not have nationals to go to, so unfortunately we didn't really, from that perspective, we weren't really able to kind of have a yardstick as far as of how good we were. I would say the one thing that I would say, we went up to Thunder Bay and we played a team that was, I want to say this was probably December or January, so seasons, I mean, we're well into the mid-year or midpoint of the season, excuse me. And that Thunder Bay team had yet to lose a game, and we unfortunately didn't hand them their loss, but we played really hard with them and ended up losing. I believe it was 3-2 in overtime. But I mean, when you have a Triple A team in Canada that you're able to put that hasn't lost, I mean, they were like 30-0 or something, like it was just ridiculous. And so I mean, our ability to to skate with them and stuff like that was relatively remarkable.
Wow, that's impressive. So you do all that stuff at that level. What were the events that happened that ended up with you coming to Toledo? Were you recruited? Did you go to tryout camp? Did you go to another tryout camp and then run into the Toledo guys? What was it that, how did you end up here in the Glass City?
So, my junior year, I played for Wisconsin AAA. We played a lot of games in Detroit. We played against the Fort Wayne Comets. So I actually had a little precursor of a lot of my teammates, who a lot of my teammates were going to be the next year. So like Cole and Kyle and Chris Hoy and like Mike and all those guys. We used to see them quite often. And so actually, there was a there was a tournament, or I don't want to call it a tournament, but it was like a player showcase in Chicago. I believe it was called EHK.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just kind of were put on a team and you just played a bunch, and a whole bunch of scouts came and saw you. And Mike actually saw me at EHK and reached out and, you know, and let me know they were interested. And so I ended up, I don't remember if I ever got drafted in it. But regardless, I ended up coming to camp, and I actually went to the Texas Tornado camp, so junior A in the North American Hockey League. And so they wanted me to go play for a different junior B team in Minnesota. And so I was kind of hemming and hawing between the two. And so I ended up coming to Toledo and played well enough during the, you know, during the camp that, you know, only wanted to sit down and have a chat. And so ended up signing, I think, the next day.
Wow. So what was it like that first year? I mean, when you walk in that training camp, right, you know, at the beginning, what was it like when you walked in there? I mean, did it feel comfortable? I mean, obviously you knew some guys from Fort Wayne. Of course, I always call that time the Fort Wayne experience, because we were like invaded by everybody from Fort Wayne, because there was like, what, let's see, there's Cole Herb, John Hale, Chris Hoy, Ryan Potts, Kyle Kleinschmidt,
Kobe Peters,
yep,
Moore, yeah.
Mike Moore, yep, absolutely. We had a whole ton of them, and it just, that was crazy back then. But what was it like for you when you first walked in that camp, though? And, were you kind of like intimidated at all, or were you nervous, or just like, hey, I got this?
You know, I mean, I think there's a little bit, you know, I mean, as hockey players, and, you know, specifically, you know, forwards who have a tendency to, you know, put the puck in the net a little bit more, you have a tendency, I don't want to say arrogant, but like you know you belong, and, you know, I mean, you see kids skate, like you know if you can do it or not, so there's a little bit of that. But then, I mean, when you're coming to a new team, there's always, you know, you're always going to have a little bit of that, you know, nervous energy, or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. I think I was fortunate enough, I went to a few junior A camps the summer before I ended up actually coming to Toledo. So, I mean, you know, the hockey's, you know, obviously the hockey's a little bit more elevated at the junior A level. So I think once you get a couple of those in your belt, I think the nervousness necessarily is probably going to be a little bit less. But yeah, I mean, anytime you come into a brand new scenario with, you know, people that you may not be super familiar with, I mean, most of those Fort Wayne guys, I only played against. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I, as far as going there, I don't really think I knew anyone as far as people I had played against or any of that kind of stuff.
Okay. So you get out there and you work hard, and then Omi calls you into the office. What was that conversation like, if you remember?
You know, I mean, obviously I was, I would have been just a little, I would have just turned 17, a couple weeks ago, or a couple weeks before. So yeah, my dad came in there, and my dad probably had more questions than I did, you know, because, I mean, you're, you know, like I said, 17, so you're like, oh, sweet, I made a team, great. Well, that's, my dad was, you know, obviously asking a few more questions than just, you know, any, you know, oh, you made the team, that's it. So I just remember, yeah, he was pretty diligent about having a conversation with Omi, and, you know, I mean, I was going to be entering my senior year, so, you know, my parents wanted to make sure that school was still a priority and all that kind of stuff. So I remember we left the meeting and then went back to the hotel room. I think that was Saturday. Went back to the hotel room, kind of talked about it a little bit, and then you decided that was the best place for us. And, you know, that was the best decision to make. And then came back Sunday for the game I was supposed to play in, and yeah, let Omi know that we were good to sign, and signed right there.
That's awesome. Now, the first game, do you remember your first game at all, as far as like who were your line mates and anything like that?
I want to say, like, I remember the first game we played against, I believe it was Cincinnati, was it the Cincinnati Cobras?
Yeah.
So I remember we played them, and I actually scored my first game. So,
wow.
So I do remember that. As far as line mates go, I want to say I played with Kobe, and I can't remember who else I played with. Ricky Brandon's sticking in my mind, but I'm pretty sure he was playing with Kelly, so I don't think that was accurate. But no, I definitely remember playing with Colby, and yeah, like I said, I scored in that first game. I'm pretty sure we had a guy, I think his name was Scott Gray. He was in 82. I believe he ended up getting into a fight, threw his shoulder out, and that was the only game he played for us the entire season.
Wow. But I'm trying to remember. I can't remember. All I remember is that we played in that rink, and I had to hook up my system through to a fax machine, and I ended up having to wire it down through some pipes and stuff, and I ended up doing play-by-play from a picnic table right there at rinkside, like right on the glass. True story. I mean, you can't make that kind of stuff up. Yeah, and so that's the one thing I remember about that place when we went down to Cincinnati. Because back then, we always opened up with Cincinnati. You know, we would always open up down there for the weekend, that first weekend of the season. And they were not a very good team back then.
No, they weren't. I remember the second game, too. In midget hockey, I think I got into one fight. Mm-hmm. And that lasted all of 3 seconds. So it was basically like, because you have to keep your cage on. And so it pretty much like some guy jumped me and then we were on the ice and wrestling around and the refs were in there. So the Cobras had some big bolt of a defenseman. I want to say he was number 9, but like the kid could barely play. And it was just, like I said, it was the second game. I was lucky and ended up scoring in the first game. So he thought I was good. And he asked me to fight, and I was like, well, okay. Like, it was, you know, brand new team trying to make a good impression. And we chop our gloves and proceed to get matching minors for roughing. It was awful.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're sitting in the penalty box, and he's chirping over at me wanting to go again. And I was like, you know what? No, that's not going to happen. And I remember Patsy goes, Kraft, he goes, yell over at him, he had his opportunity, he's done. And I just laughed. I was just like, yeah, that we're good. I'm definitely not this role. We'll let Bobby do Bobby's job.
Yeah, that's right. Now, the funny part is, I think, didn't Potsy get into a fight that year? Was it that year or the next year that he got into a fight in Cincinnati?
So Patsy's second year was my first year.
Okay, then it must have been the first.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm pretty sure that would have been Patsy's first year. So the year before I played, I think was when Pats got to a scrum, because I don't know. I want to say he finished like second or third in scoring in our league.
Yeah.
During my season, so I don't think he really was, you know, dealing with a whole lot of that kind of.
No. He never. Well, he only did it once, just because he wanted to try it. And he ended up on his knees, and it was so awful and awkward, and he wanted to crawl under a shell. I mean, it was really, really bad. But it's like I told him on the bus afterwards. I'm like, dude, at least you stood up, and, you know, you had the guts to go for it. So, you know, nobody else did. So he was, you know, but he was just such a great kid, still is. They're all kids to me still, because even though you guys are now – you know, in your 30s and heading towards 40. I mean, throughout all those seasons and stuff, you guys are still kids. You're my kids, you know. But, you know, even though you got kids of your own, you know, so what? But
I was laughing. I was looking at the Toledo Cherokee roster, mm-hmm. and there are literally kids who were not even born the year I played there that are on the team now.
Yes.
Like, holy cow, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, it kind of puts things in perspective, doesn't it?
When I stayed in Toledo, I stayed with Kevin and Vicky Coor. Mm-hmm. Fantastic people. I still stay in touch with them to this day, I should say. And when I first moved in with them, their son Kyle was 7.
Oh my!
And he's now married, and like, you know, he's like a real person now. And my oldest son is older than what Kyle was when I lived with them.
Oh my gosh!
It's just like, holy cow, this is insane.
It makes you feel old, doesn't it?
Oh, it's funny.
It is. It is very funny. Well, okay, so let's talk more about that first year. Tell me about, I mean, obviously, the biggest influx was the kids from Fort Wayne. But did you play with anyone else that you remember besides Kobe up front?
I mean, honestly, that year was a little bit, you know, I was, there was a couple week stretch where I was actually kind of in and out of the lineup, which was very weird to me. I mean, that really had never been the case. And I remember calling my dad complaining to him that I wasn't playing, and I will never forget. My dad goes, "Aw, do you want me to call Mr. Olney and tell him to stop being so mean to you?" I mean, it just, you could feel the sarcasm through the phone.
Oh,
and yeah, and so I was just like, okay, you know, just pick it up. And I remember towards the back half of the year, actually, I want to say we had some injuries, and our D were actually pretty light. And so Bakes actually brought me back, and I played with Mike Moore, who, I mean, Mike was a stud. He could play, you know, a good 30-plus minutes every game and not even – he would
break a sweat, yep.
And I remember playing with him on the top pair after a couple of weeks, kind of getting back into it. And, so that's pretty much where I finished the year off. I mean, I went from, you know, playing forward and trying to be the offensive guy, and then all of a sudden, you know, finished up the year on the back, you know, on the back end, which was, I think that was the first time I'd ever really played. I mean, I kind of dabbled in defense and stuff like that, but I think that was the first time I'd actually played for it for a long stretch of time.
And at a high level, too. You know, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, when you're playing with Mike, you're not getting slouch minutes, and you're not getting the, you know, the bad pairings. I mean, I remember we'd go up against, you know, when we go play St. Louis, we'd play against, you know, Stastny, and they had another guy, Slias or something like that. But those two ended up going, I think they led the league 1-2 as, I think, 16-year-olds.
There were two Stastnys. There were Paul Stastny and there was Jan.
Yeah, Paul was the one. Cause he's an 85. But he had a line mate, and the two of them put up like 80 plus points or something. I mean, it was ridiculous. And I mean, Paul, obviously, again, he's pretty good, still playing in the NHL. And then, I can't remember what his line mate's name was, but he ended up playing in the USHL for 2 years. And then I wanted to say he played for Brown, or one of those Ivy League schools, for 4 years. So,
holy cow.
I mean, again, two not terrible people. So
yeah, they had St. Louis had a whole bunch of not so terrible people back then.
Yeah.
They had a really, really, really not so terrible coach, Jack Behan, who I give crap to this day. But he's probably one of my favorite people. I always told him that if they ever had a CSHL Hall of Fame, you know, he'd obviously be on the first class.
Oh, for sure.
And and he goes, "Well, if they ever have a broadcaster's wing," I said, "Jack, if you ever have a broadcaster's wing, I'll let you enshrine me. You'll be inducting me and stuff." But that's because I say that because, number one, I couldn't pick just one coach out of my team to induct me. There's too many of them that I respect, love, and just treasure what they brought to the team. So I couldn't just pick one. So I had to pick somebody away from that and just let them know that they all would be the ones I'd want. But it's like trying to pick your favorite kid, you know? You just can't. Anyway, so getting back to that, though, St. Louis had stacked. I mean, they had, if I'm not mistaken, they won something like 5 or 6 national championships in the decade. That's insane.
Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. And I think they won like 3 or 4 in a row, too. Like, it was just, and I think my first year was the year Metro won, I believe.
Yeah, 2002.
Yeah.
That was John Cooper.
Sadly enough, St. Louis' team was actually better than Metro. It just, when we had Gold Cup,
yep.
I mean, we ended up beating Peoria somehow, and
I remember that because they shaved my head.
I remember that too. You shaved your head. But yeah, and that St. Louis team was better. They just happened to have one off game, and that pretty much cost them any opportunity to go. But yeah, that team was. I mean, they were just fantastic. They churned out players upon players upon players.
Oh yeah, that they did, and. You know, I always said it was because of the fact that they were one of only 2 states in the country at the time. I don't know about now, but at the time, that hockey was high school hockey was considered an intramural sport. So they didn't get, you know, because most of the other states, you either play high school or you play travel. You play like juniors or, you know, whatever. But sure. You couldn't play both. Well, in Missouri, hockey was considered an intramural sport. It wasn't a fully accredited high school sport. So kids would play high school and they'd play junior. So I thought that kind of get, I mean, yeah, you, they, it, I thought it, it built them up a little bit, you know?
Terms well, yeah, endurance. I think the NHL broadcasts or whatever have seemed to bring this up quite a bit lately is, you know, there's a pretty deep, you know, core of old St. Louis Blue players, whether they retired there or they played there at some point, moved on, and then ultimately retired, but they do come back, and they've really built up quite a strong youth program and quite a strong junior program there. And I think you're kind of seeing the fruits of that labor with, you know, like I said, a really strong junior team.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to agree with you on that part of it. They do have a really good alumni association, a fantastic one. So that first year, I mean, when you beat St. Louis, it was like a reason to celebrate. But I'm trying to remember. I don't think we beat St. Louis that year, did we?
So we played Peoria in the initial playoffs, and then that was to go to the Gold Cup. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to remember in the round robin if we beat them or not. I want to say they lost to Metro, and I can't remember if we actually won or not. I don't know. I'm getting old, Nick.
I know 2001 we went to Hartford. I don't think we made it to Nationals 2002.
No, we lost. So Gold Cup was actually in St. Louis. So we had one weekend where we got to drive all the way to Peoria, come back, and then the next weekend we got to drive all the way to St. Louis. And yeah, we did. Metro was the only team that made it out of St. Louis to go on to Nationals.
Yep. And then so you finished the year playing defense. Who was your goaltender that year? Do you remember?
Was that Mike McCaskey?
Yep. There was McCaskey and there was somebody else, and I can't remember who it was.
I remember McCaskey, he had that big old white helmet that we all tried to get him to put some decals on or something, but it was just awful.
Yep, that was him. That was him. I'm trying to think who else was, because I think I'd have to go back to like one of the other earlier podcasts to listen to.
Wait, find was Elliot, because Elliot was he in 82? I want to say maybe he was the goalie.
Well, I know, was it him or was it Tony Corsini?
Must have been Elliot. That doesn't sound familiar.
Okay, then it must have been Elliot, because Elliot played a couple seasons with us. And I know he played with Andy Reynolds, and he played with Tony Corsini. And I think so. It might have been Elliot, because I always called him Easy E, because he just was just so smooth and so yeah, easy going and stuff back then. And anyway, we had two really decent, two good goaltenders back then.
Yeah, it was Ellie. I just Googled. He's an 82, so that would have been his last year of eligibility.
Okay. Then, so we move on to your second season. How do you feel? Did your role change at all in the way that you came in your rookie season versus what your own expectations were for second season?
Yeah, quite a bit. I went to a couple different junior A camps over the summer. Initially tried staying on defense, but that's not, I mean, my skill set and kind of how I am. Like, I'm not a defenseman. So I quickly got out of that and then ended up coming to Cherokee camp and knew I was going to be a forward. And Omi told me I was going to be the number one defenseman, and I said, no, I'm not. I'm playing forward. And he kind of looked at me. And then I proceeded to put up just a bunch of points in, you know, during the tryouts and all that kind of stuff. And so I think that pretty much quickly put to rest any potential of me staying back on defense. And yeah, pretty much from the get-go, it was forward, and we were scoring points and going from there.
So now, was there a big turnover of personnel when you came in that second year?
I mean, there was not to the extent. So my first year, there was actually only three vets. So it was Kelly, it was Bobby Mays, and it was Potts. Mm-hmm. So pretty everyone else was a rookie, or at least was new to the team, I should say.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that was, you know, pretty big. And then, I mean, from that perspective, our turnover the second year would have been substantially lower. So Kelly came back, Bobby came back, and then Potts went to go, I think he went and played D3 in Northern Wisconsin.
Northlands, wasn't it?
I'm sorry?
Northlands, I think, college?
That sounds right, yeah. And so we did, we did lose a handful of guys, and we got in new guys or, stuff like that. But it wasn't dramatic compared to the previous year, I would say.
Okay, so tell me what that second year was like. I mean, as far as, what you remember about it, who you played with, or some of the guys on the team.
Yeah, so, I was fortunate enough. I played with Ben Kubicki, or we called him Gary. I remember.
Yep.
I remember Blasto and I had. He ended up coming. I want to say it was our first year. He came like partway through the season. And
yes.
Bakes had no idea who he was, but he kept hearing Blasto and I call him Gary. And so finally, Bakes is yelling at him, and he's like, "Gary, Gary!" And we're just dying on the ice laughing. And finally, we're like, "Bakes, that's Ben." And he's like, "Why are you calling him Gary?"
Exactly.
Ben was a good skater. I played with him, I believe, to start the season. And then Kelly had a really hot start to the year, and he ended up going and playing with Capital Center for a little bit.
Yep, I remember up in Lansing.
In Lansing, yeah. And so I had the good fortune of playing with Larry Willard for a little bit.
Infamous. He's the one they called Boogie, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yes. Lori Willard. Yes. Nicknamed him Boogie. But yeah, Larry, Jesus. Yeah, he was a heck of a player. Him and I played, we had fantastic chemistry together. He liked to do this little like behind the net backhand sauce pass that I would just literally sit back door, wait for the goalie to follow him around and just tap it in. So, we ended up, I think Larry led the league in scoring, and I think I was in second place until Sean Sutphin ended up scoring like four goals against Cincinnati in the last game to take me by 1 point. So I ended up finishing third, which not terrible, but yeah.
I was gonna say, man.
Which is actually funny too, because Sean, he ended up playing with the Ice Diggers the next year, and that would have been 03, 04, I believe.
Yep.
And he actually stayed with my old housing family.
Wow. So, now, who did he play with when he played in our league?
Columbus, I believe.
Yep, you're right. I was just
trying. Like
I just.
Yeah, him and like Sean DeStefano or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those guys could absolutely play.
And so, because I remember too with Kelly. He came back to Toledo because he was just sitting up there killing time because he didn't get into the lineup very much, and when he didn't see the ice hardly at all. So he came back, and that kid, him and Larry both, they could flat out play. And that was impressive. Now, when you played that second year, who were some of the other guys on that team that you remember?
So we had, like I said, Larry and Ben, Kelly, Fred Hassenfuss, we had Blasto, Chase Gunning.
Is that the year Pomponio played?
Pomponio played both years that I played.
Which, was it first year? Yeah, it had to be first year then. That he dropped that kid from Columbus, the heavyweight.
Oh, yeah. I played with Tony 3 years in a row. Cause we, so I played, 2 years in Toledo and then 1 year up in Northern Michigan. And that kid, he didn't fight often, but when he did, it was two punches tops, and the other kid did not end up with his nose in a place where it should have been. He was an absolute beast.
And he was a scrawny guy. He wasn't a big guy.
I have no idea. Maybe it was the Italian in them. I don't know. He just, that kid could throw.
I just remember the fight against the guy from Columbus. We were at Tam O'Shanter that first year. And the kid challenged him. And he was an overager. He was a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
And Omi was on the bench screaming, "No, don't. And so Pomponio drops the mitts. And Tony just lands one punch. And he ends up breaking the guy's orbital bone, his nose, I think his cheekbone. And the guy was knocked out cold, and he fell to the ice. And he broke his wrist because he landed on his wrist.
Yeah, I remember only, because, I mean, Tony was, what, 15 at that point?
Yeah, it was 2 weeks before his 16th birthday.
Yeah, and I remember Omi was not happy that they were fighting. And then, 10 seconds later, he was like, "Oh, kid can take care of himself. Never mind."
Yeah, I mean, that kid, ooh, he just, I mean, probably one of the top 10, if not top 5 fighters we've ever had in Toledo.
He was sneaky tough too. Cause like you said, like you look at him and you certainly wouldn't envision he's, going to be knocking players out the way he did.
And he would be physical as he was. And he was a tough kid. He came from New Boston, Michigan, if I remember. Cause when I do this stuff here, Chris, I purposely do not use the internet. I try to do it from memory. It just makes it more of a challenge and it makes it fun.
Sure.
But
he had hands like feet, but he could
fight. I'm trying to remember. I can't repeat the nickname you had for him, but anyway. If I remember too, that was it might have been the first year. Cole Herb. That dude also had hands.
What's funny about him, Mick, is Omi pretty much told him he was tough, and he didn't really necessarily know that that was true or not, but Omi kept telling him, he's like, you're a big kid, you're tough, you're strong, blah, 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 blah. St. Louis comes to town, and they had I remember they had a real big, tough guy, one of their, like, third or fourth line forwards, and Cole ended up challenging him. And the guy pretty much dummied Cole. And he had a black eye, bloody nose, all that kind of stuff. And then the rest of the year, that was the only fight he lost. Like you said, Cole was tough as nails. And so he needed to work that first one through. And then after that, he was lights out. Yeah. I mean, between him and Bobby, there was no one that was going to go running Kelly, that's for
sure. Nope, not at all. And if I'm trying to remember, it's probably the wrong year. But there was a kid in St. Louis that was their tough guy. He was a 16-year-old, and he was their tough guy. And you might have heard of him because he ended up winning a Stanley Cup with the Blackhawks by the name of Brandon Bolig.
Yeah, that was a different year.
That was a different year? Okay, because I remember he fought at Gold Cup and he was 16, and he fought Brett Lincoln, who was an overager for us. And they had the thing, they had just put in the penalty thing where if you fought with less than 5 minutes to go, you'd be thrown out and everything, and you'd be suspended the next game. And so they fought with 5:01 left to go in the third period.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I think Bowling's in 87. So, I mean, I think Cole's in 83, I'm in 84, so... The likelihood,
No. Like I said, he was Bolig was 16 when he did that, so that was probably like a year or two before. But yeah. Cole Herb, and the other thing I remember about Cole too was when he fought, or I think it was for Wasn't it for rookie initiation, the rookie haircut? He buzzed his head and he put leopard spot. He dyed his hair leopard spots. That, oh my God, that was the funniest thing. But that was him. He was nuts. And he was a few fries short of a Happy Meal, and he liked it that way. And I just absolutely love that kid. And of course, I mean, when your dad's been your coach most of your life, you got to rebel somewhere. But
For sure.
and his dad and his mom were wonderful people too. Larry, and I can't remember his mom's name, but they were both really nice people, really nice. And so I just remember, like I said, he was just one of those tough guys. But I don't remember you getting in a ton of fights when you were in Toledo. Did you?
No, I got in the one my first year, and then I think I got in three the second year. So that was the year we were up in Monroe. It was our first home game. We played Grand Rapids, and Schmitty, since Mike Moore didn't come back, Schmitty was our top defenseman, and they had a kid named Drew Satterly, who was following Schmitty around trying to fight him. And if you remember Schmitty, he was probably what, 5'7", 150, soaking wet. Like, I'm probably being facetious here, but I mean, he was not a large person.
Yeah, no,
And
not.
Drew Satterly was a 16-year-old who was 6'3", about 230, and he barely made it down because he was up at the Sarnia Sting in the OHL.
Yep.
He was up there at their camp, and they wanted him to sign just essentially to be their enforcer. And so he was following Schmitty around trying to get him to go. And I was like, whatever. I'm like, that's not my skill set, but I'm at least bigger.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you're
So
not a short guy.
yeah, so I'm well, at that time I was about 6'4", probably 195 tops. So I got him by an inch, but he's got me by 30 pounds. And so I go down into the defensive zone. I kind of give him a little tap on the back of the legs, and he turns around. I'm like, let's go. And we drop the gloves, and he proceeded to pound the heck out of me.
Oh.
And I'm sitting in the penalty box, and I'm finally collecting all my thoughts. And yeah, I'm sitting there, and I was like, I don't know. And Schmitty comes over, and they're giving me my gloves and the stick and everything. And he taps me and goes, man, thanks. I'm so glad that was you and not me. So that would have been my first year out of high school. And so I had signed up for an English class out of Monroe Community College. And so that game was Sunday, and I proceeded to have to go to my first day of class on Monday.
Oh boy.
So I get there, and we kind of going around the room, and what's your name? What are you doing? Blah, 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 blah. And so I stand up, and I have two black eyes. My nose is swollen. Like, I look terrible. And I explain, like, I'm here. I'm a hockey player, yada, yada, yada. And the teacher's like, what happened? And I was like, oh, I got into a fight. And she goes, let me guess, I should see the other guy? And I said, you could. His face probably looks perfectly fine, though. Yeah, so that didn't go so well.
Oh man. But I mean, still though, I mean, I think a lot of people probably would have been not necessarily, they might have been a little gun shy because of your size. Because when you're at 6'4", nearly 200 pounds, that's nothing to, that's not Swiss cheese. But so I mean, that's it. I mean, still, that probably prevented more fights than anything, just the idea
Yeah,
that.
and then I remember I don't remember the one in between the two, but to bookend it, I remember getting into a fight against Columbus. I think it was like the second or third last game of the season. And we like our that Toledo team was fantastic. And so, we're thinking we're gonna go on a big run and all that kind of stuff. And like I said, I finished up the year playing, being fortunate enough to play with Lair. And this guy, the defenseman in Columbus, just kept trying to just run him and run him and run. Finally, I had enough. And he wouldn't drop the gloves with Bobby because Bobby challenged him 1,000 times.
Oh, of course.
And so their top pair was this, they had a good, like, not short, like, he was just well, everyone's shorter compared to me virtually, but they had a smaller defenseman, and so he kept trying to slash Larry in the wrist. And so I finally skated over to him, and I gave him a real good cross check, and I, you know, kind of dangled the gloves out there, and all of a sudden I get a cross check in the back, and I hear the guy go, "Let's go!" And I was like, I was annoyed. Because, you know, Laird to this day is still one of my really, really, really good friends. But, I mean, when you're playing, it's, you know, a little more amped up. So I was fuming. So I drop my gloves, and I turn around, and I look up because of how big this dude is.
Oh, man.
Like, oh. I'm like, this isn't going to end well. And I actually lucked out. We kind of locked up right away. I, you know, after you've been, you know, kind of in enough scrums, you kind of realize what to do. So I kind of held him out for a little bit, and threw a couple of punches. They ended up landing, ended up pulled his shoulder pads down a little bit, fed him for, you know, a couple more punches, and the refs jumped in. But Omi was absolutely irate that, because again, like, Larry was first in the league in scoring. I was, you know, 2-3 in that juncture, and he came into the locker room after the period was over and yelling, and what would have happened if your wrist would have broken, blah 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 blah. Oh yeah, he was not too happy that I was fighting, but like, you know what, it's there. Like, no one's taking liberties with my center, sorry.
That's right. When that's your meal ticket right there, that's one of your top guys.
Those are the rules, Nick.
Yep, that's right. You don't mess with your top guy. Why do you think Gretzky had Semenko back then? You know,
it wasn't
because he could walk defensemen. You know, just saying.
I like to think of myself more of a Yari Curry than a Semenko.
Oh man, it's gonna cause my ribs to hurt, man. Stop it. Oh, but okay. So that second year, you guys, like I said, you guys had a really good team. Trying to remember. Let's see. The second year, did you make it to Nationals? I think.
No, we ended up losing to the Wayne Wheels. We got swept by them somehow. We were the 2 seed. They were the 7 seed. We outshot them something like 120-37 in 2 games.
Wow.
And they had a goalie, I believe his name was Brent Reeves, who just, he absolutely stood on his head, and he ended up winning them the series, and I believe they actually ended up making it to Nationals, because that's when, so that year the CSHL sent 2 teams. They, mm-hmm. I believe they sent St. Louis and they sent Wayne, because Wayne lost to St. Louis in the championship game of the Gold Cup. But, I mean, all intents and purposes, I mean, it was basically us and St. Louis were the 2 top teams in Junior B, period. And we just, 2 games in a row, we scored 2 goals out of 120 shots. So we're a little snake bit, and yeah, there's not a whole lot you're going to do about that.
Well, when you got a hot goal, when you run into a hot goaltender, that,
yeah.
And here's the irony of it. I don't know if it was the next season or the season after, Brett Reeves was our goaltender in Toledo. True story. He's matter of fact, I'm friends with him on Facebook to this day, you know, and stuff. So it's funny that you mentioned him, because yeah, he ended up getting picked up by Toledo. I think it was the next season after you left. And he was just a really good goaltender. That's the thing I remember. And the funny part is, his cousin, I think it was his cousin or his brother. I think it might have been, I think it was his cousin. Anyway, was Bart Reeves, who played for us. That led to Bart coming to play for us a few years later. And Bart was a just think Tony Pomponio. Probably an inch shorter, but the same build. But his knuckles, when he hit people, I mean, he hurt them. He didn't just like maybe win a fight and you get a few good licks. And no, he was like Tony. When he hit you, he hurt you. And he became known as the heavyweight in the CSHL. And the funny thing is, I think maybe 145 pounds tops.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. And he wasn't a tall guy. He was a shorter guy, and just a gangly redhead. Just doop doop doop. And what? But like I said, probably one of the top, again in my top 10. I'll have to put a top 10 together sometime. But he was just a beast when it came to dropping the mitts. And I seen big guys challenge him. They would challenge. I remember in Peoria, he had, I think he had like two guys try to fight him, and he's at the same time. Not separate, at the same time. And he basically massacred them both.
Wow.
Yeah, he was just that way. And but he was a really, he's a rock solid kid. That the thing that I always was impressed by the most, because he, not only was he just a really tough, mean and on the ice, he could put the puck in the net every now and then, but also off the ice, he was just really a good kid. And I'll never forget that. You know, but anyway, I don't want to deviate too far. I want to get back to you because now when you left Toledo and you went to Northern Ontario, did you have to make another big adjustment?
No, not really. I mean, in Toledo, you know, it was kind of between Larry and Kelly and I, like one of us was going to be, you know, kind of the go-to to score goals. So, you know, kind of going, moving on to, you know, Northern Michigan, it was pretty much kind of the same thing. I mean, I think both of those years I ended up leading our team in points, both in regular season and playoffs. So it just kind of more of an enhanced role, nothing necessarily different. But I mean, I think the one thing that was a little bit different was my first year in Northern Michigan was the team's first year. So it's not like you had vets per se, you know, like you had guys who had different junior experiences or, you know, I mean, we had some, you know, some midget AAA kids or something like that, but there really wasn't a culture per se that was already kind of in place. So that was a little bit different, but other than that, it was, you know, pretty much, at least from my perspective, standard operating, just this is what you're here to do, you know, go score some goals and be a leader and, you know, kind of go from there.
Okay, well, let me ask you now. You talked earlier about there being some CSHL guys that went up there to play that you remember. Do you remember any of their names, any of those guys, or where they played?
Yeah. So Steve Krasuski, he was a forward, played for Wayne Wheels. Kevin, I'm blanking on his last name. He also played for Wayne. He was a defenseman. My first year there, he actually ended up playing at AIC for a year or two. He was a defenseman for Grand Rapids. We had a goalie for Grand Rapids, Kirk Panic. He was actually one of the best men in my, or, you know, one of my groomsmen in my wedding.
Wow.
I want to say there's a couple more, but I think Ryan Benke ended up coming up.
Yep.
Obviously from Toledo, Pomponio was up there. Trying to remember if there's anyone else. There's a couple more Grand Rapids people who weren't necessarily mainstays on Grand Rapids Junior B team as much as they played a couple games with the Junior B team, but they also played on the midget major AAA team.
Uh-huh.
So, but yeah, quite a few that were there.
Wow, that's.
And I know Rob Kroll was one of our scouts, so he was. Well, initially was the Wayne coach and then ultimately ended up coming over to Toledo. But yeah, he was one of the scouts for our team. So
that's funny.
Yeah.
Gosh, I did Crowley. I did a podcast with Crowley and we talked a little about that, but we didn't really go into that much as far as his scouting days. But there anything like his playing days and his coaching days, there's probably a few stories there too. But anyway, so. Now, you played, where did you play after Northern Ontario or Northern Michigan?
So I played there for 2 years and then I actually just went, I was out of hockey. Ended up going to Western Michigan University just as a student, which actually kind of to bookended as you were saying to lead off the podcast. I was a student at Western Michigan when you saw me at the ice rink in Grand Rapids. I was just working. There was a company that had a couple pro shops there, two in Kalamazoo and one in Grand Rapids, and so I just happened to be there, you know, working at the arena, and yeah, saw you guys stroll in, and I was just like, oh my God, that's Mick.
Yep, no getting around that one. I looked over and I heard you say Mick, and I'm like looking, and I'm like, wait, I know him. Oh my God, it's Kraft. That was hilarious. But you know, I mean, the thing is that it's hockey's a small world. And you know, I told you about Bart Reeves, Brett's cousin. Ran into him like about four years after he played. I ran into him. We were in, I think we were in Chicago at what is now known as the Hurster Cup. It used to be Cold Cup. But now it's called the Hurster Cup, or at least it was. Anyway, so we finished the tournament, and we're heading towards the bus. And me and one of the coaches are talking while we're heading over there. Next thing you know, we see Bart Reeves show up, and I did the same thing. I'm like, I know him. Oh, my God, it's Reeves. And, you know, it's like, so it's that small world. And that's the thing I think that I love most about hockey is that you can run into somebody that you haven't seen in a long time. And then it's like you guys were never apart. You know, there wasn't any time. There's no time travel. You just pick up where you left off, and you just start going again, because it's you know, it's just a small world in hockey. You know, there's always a 6-degree separation where somebody knows somebody. Sure. You know, and that's just how it is. And,
especially when when you're playing in the junior ranks. And you start going, like during the summer, you start going try out for different teams and all that kind of stuff. I remember we had my second year, we had a showcase in Flint. Mm-hmm. And we played Grand Rapids one of the games. And I had a play that was virtually identical. I ended up scoring two goals. It was a one-on-one. And I dangled the defenseman both times. It was the exact same defenseman. He had these awful T-blade. Like blades on his skates, the ones that you didn't sharpen, they made this atrocious sound. I can't believe they actually ever made them. They're the worst piece of hockey equipment that has ever come to fruition. But so I remember after I scored my second goal, I said something to the extent of maybe hockey's not in your future to the defenseman. It was something in that realm. And so I went to try out for, I believe it was Topeka in the USHL over the summer. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, like three bags down, I see the defenseman that played for Grand Rapids. And so we're, you know, everyone's kind of getting ready and whatever. And he goes, hey, he's like, you played for Toledo? I was like, yep. And he goes, are you Chris Kraft? And I said, yep. And he goes, yeah, he goes, I'm going to give this hockey thing a little bit more of a try, but we'll see. And I was dying laughing. I was like, I mean, you never know someone's personality. Like, he could have thought I actually personally meant it, and he could have been all, you know, hurt feelings about it, but he went with it perfectly fine. But, it, like you said, it really is remarkable how close the hockey community is. I mean, you know, whether it's through tryouts or you go to a new team and you see someone and you're like, oh, you know, you see a bag you recognize. And you're like, oh, do you know blank? And all of a sudden, like, they're best friends with someone you used to play with a couple years ago or something like that. So, yeah, it really is remarkable how many people know each other when it comes to the hockey circle.
Well, let's tie it all in real nice here. How hard was it for you to make that adjustment when you finished playing hockey up in Northern Michigan and realized your playing days were over? Well, your competitive playing days, I should say.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it takes a little bit. I mean, you know, summer was certainly weird where you're not really trying, you know, you're not working out for anything or anything like that. So that transition was certainly, it definitely was weird at first. But now I'm fortunate enough that I have a mite and a mini mite that I get to coach, you know, four or five times a week. And then I have a daughter who is three, so hopefully she'll be getting the skates on here shortly. So I'll have plenty of coaching days plenty of coaching days in my future to take up any of the missed hockey time.
Well, how old were you, or how long ago did you take up coaching? Just when the kids came around, or?
Yeah. So I've been, I think this is my fourth year of coaching now. So, yeah, it's funny, too, because you definitely start to understand, like, different, you can't say something necessarily, and just, you know, we have a drill that we do where I'll, you know, tell the kids, hey, get open. Well, you're dealing with 7-8 year old kids. What does get open mean?
Yep.
Right? So you have to adjust your communication style of, you actually have to explain and teach them what you mean as opposed to just tell them what you're trying to do, because they're not going to understand that. So that definitely took a bit of transition, because you're used to dealing with, you know, not that you're necessarily coaching your teammates, but if you're trying to explain something to them, you can use different words than when you're trying to talk to a 5, 6, 7, 8 year old kid, you know, of, you know, the expectations that you're trying to set for them.
The expectations and the expletives, both. Anyway, there is that factor. Anyhow, so now what? Well, fast forward to now. What is Chris Kraft up to these days, in addition to coaching your little ones?
You know, that's a bulk of it. I mean, we're on the ice usually Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then we have games, you know, Saturday and Sunday. Yeah, I work for a small firm, you know, about 15 minutes away. We do business valuation, so that, you know, takes up some of my time. And then now that the NHL season is finally upon us, I've been known to watch a hockey game or two. I know my oldest son's pretty pumped that the Pens are playing the Flyers tonight. It's Friday, so we'll be watching that. And yeah, just 3 kids takes up a lot of time.
I was going to say, my gosh, your wife is a trooper.
She's actually going back to get her master's, so she'll be going lax by hanging out with all of her student friends at school this weekend. So I'll be single parenting today.
You'll be Mr. Dad. Okay, got it. So, okay, well, that's a good thing, though, man. Okay, so let me ask you, who would you say was probably, from your Toledo days, who was probably some of the more wackiest kids? Or do you remember any wacky stories of some of the things you guys did back then?
I mean, the biggest character on the team was Blasto, by far.
Todd Blaskowitz.
Most of those stories cannot be shared. But, no, I mean, we had, especially that second year, because there was a good group of us that came from the first year.
Uh-huh.
We were all relatively close. So I think there was a familiarity that was there that, you know, we were a pretty close group. There was a lot of people who would, you know, goof around and, you know, kind of, you know, mess around with everyone, you know, whether you're trying to put clear tape on someone's skates before practice or, you know, just something, you know, just something to just kind of, I mean, because, you know, the hockey, it's funny because while you're in it, the hockey year is long, and when you reflect on it, the hockey year is short. You know, I mean, while you're in it on the day-to-day, you're just like, ugh, we got to go to practice again. And now you look back on it and you're like, man, hanging out with your buddies, playing junior hockey, going to practice is awesome. It's so much better than going to work every day.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny how your perspective changes. But, yeah, I mean, while you're in the day-to-day grind, you know, you just got to kind of mess with each other and lighten it up as much as you can.
Well, you know, that team from 02, I think it was 02, 03, ended up helping a friend of mine get married and all that good stuff. He was the team doctor that year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was a big guy. His name was Todd Leslie. And, of course, everyone just called him Doc. But he was up there in Monroe, and he met his future wife up there. Well, he was up
That's
there.
Funny.
Yeah, and so he ended up getting married. Matter of fact, I was best man in his wedding. And stuff, and I still, you know, we're still best buds today, you know.
That's very cool.
Yeah, he's down in Findlay somewhere, and south of Toledo. And so like I said, we keep in touch still to this day, and still, I'm godfather to a couple of his kids, so it's a pretty cool thing. So
That's
anyway,
awesome.
all right, well, do you have any questions you have for me as far as, trying to remember something from back then or whatever? It's up to you.
You've seen a bunch of cool barns from, a broadcasting perspective. So I guess I'll ask you this. Out of all the CSHL barns that you've ever gone to and you've seen games in, what was your favorite from like a fan perspective and then from a broadcaster perspective?
From a fan perspective, as much as I hate to say it, I'm trying to think here. Man, that's a lot of barns. But probably from a fan perspective, I would say probably my favorite place to broadcast from, or to just be at, as far as a barn goes, would probably be. It would probably be St. Louis, just from a fan perspective, just because, to tell you a quick story, we went to St. Louis one year and we were getting our butts kicked. This was like after you were there. And Jack, the coach, and I have always been good friends. We've always gotten along great. Well, we were getting shelled and I was getting frustrated and I wasn't in my normal perch to broadcast the game from. I was over in the corner somewhere at ice rink level. And so I'm just sitting there and I run into him in the lobby and I'm going, man, this is bad. It was in between periods because you could do that. You could like literally walk into each other right there. And I just said, man, I'm getting to the point right now I could use a drink because they were shelling us pretty good. And so Jack, being the smart aleck wiseacre that he is, has parents of his kids send pitchers of beer to me at my broadcast position. I with like in the third period, and he jokingly says to them, "Your kid's playing time depends on it." Next thing I know, I've got like a slew of pitchers of beer there, sitting there at my table, and I'm like going, "How in the heck am I going to explain this, drink this, or anything?" So I had all these parents, I'm going, free beer. It was one of the funniest little stuff. I mean, he's been known to pull a stunner too. I'm gonna have to get him on a future podcast to so we can have a few laughs about that. But he is one of, like I said, of this in the CHL era, he was one of my favorite people. Him and Mike Flanagan up in Grand Rapids, with Jeff Lang. Langer is like one of the funniest human beings that I know. Just guys like that that made that league. Bob Jacobson in Cleveland. You never seen him. I don't think there. I think he was born with a cup of coffee in his hand. Just things like that. That little things that you don't think about, and it's just they are what make the league work, and they were what made it so much fun. But as far as from a broadcasting perspective, I'd probably have to say. And I hate saying this too, probably more than anything, because while I got along great, and even though they were our big rival in St. Louis, they were a huge rival. The team that I used to like, ugh, and didn't really care about going out there, but when I did, the rink that they played in was beautiful because they used to be in the USHL, and that's Dubuque. They were always it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was a little bit before my time.
Or after,
Or
actually.
excuse me, after. Sorry, yes,
Yeah,
after.
they played in the five star or five flags arena, or I can't remember what it was called, but the Fighting Saints used to play there. Now they had all the seating on, at the ends of the rink and at and on the one side. You know how the small rinks are. They always have seating on one side, and then the benches and stuff and the locker rooms on the other. Well, this wasn't quite like that. It was sort of like that in that they had the benches and you go to the locker rooms and stuff on the one side. There was no seating over there. But on the other side, it was like basically a bowl. So it was all kind of almost like Joe Louis Arena-esque. and they had the broadcast booth at the top of the seats, you know, above the seats, they had a broadcast booth there, and I had beautiful sight line. So I have to give them full marks for that. That was probably the best I could see as far as for seeing, calling a game, you know. So I was able to
Sure.
do that stuff. But I would say that would probably have been probably the best place that I had been to. And then yet I the when we played in Quad Cities over in Davenport, Iowa, it was a small rink, but it was still really a nice sight line. And I loved calling games there because it was so, I mean, they set me up really nice there. The folks there in Davenport were really, really nice to us and stuff. So for calling games and everything. And I really enjoyed that too. So, but that's pretty much my answer for that. So, Chris, before we go, is there anyone you want to say hey to, or, you know, I mean, as far as, to Cherokee Nation, if you want, because even though you know, there are different eras that I cover here, 20 years worth, people from before I was there, from after I was there, and everything in between, listen to this. So, you know, just if there's anything you want to say to Cherokee Nation, now's the time. Go for it.
I mean, yeah, no one specifically. Just, definitely enjoyed my time there. Had a great time. Really enjoyed my housing family. Enjoyed Omi. Enjoyed Bakes. Miss you, Bakes. So yeah, just, go Cherokee, and that's pretty much all I had to say.
Well, I tell you what, you've said a lot here, and we appreciate it very much. So, you know, I thank you for this, and thank everybody here for tuning in. And big thanks here to my friend here, Chris Kraft, number 21 in the program, number one in your hots. And it's Oconomowoc, right? Did I say it right?
You did, that's correct.
I'll get it. I'll get it. I'll get it. It'll take time, but I'll get it. Anyway, I just remember that in Waukesha, and I remember Waukesha because of Happy Days. Because there was an episode where they talked about Waukesha, and that's the reason I remember it. So, but anyway, thank you, my friend. I appreciate it, and thank you guys. As we're starting them back up again, each episode will drop Saturday and Wednesday as we do them. So we will record them and then drop them every Wednesday and Saturday. A new episode will drop. So we appreciate you tuning in. Don't forget, you can find us anywhere that you get your podcast from, whether it's iHeart, TuneIn, Podbean, the whole host of them. I believe Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon. We have them all over. So be sure to subscribe. That way, when a new one drops, you'll be able to pick it up and listen to it. And hey, just drop us a line. Let us know if you know any alumni that might not know about us. That hey, you want to hear them on a podcast. Because I'll be more than happy to do it. So, anyway, for Chris Kraft, I am Mick. Thanks so much. And we will talk to you soon as you've got, well, hey, you've been listening to the Cherokee Rewind right here on CherokeeRewind.podbean.com.